So today I'm with Julie Morris. Julie Morris has been adopted her whole life. She did know she was adopted with her family and raised, but she never knew her original family. So we get to learn her story. So I'm excited about this. And I wanted to share some quotes, things that Julie has shared with me before we even start the interview. So Julie has said, "I have experienced the pain and the joy of adoption in my life. People are not always aware of the sorrow that adopted children or adults carry with them throughout their lives. I am very lucky to have found the answers that most are seeking, and I hope that others can find the acceptance that they need on their journey. And if you're lucky in your lifetime, something amazing can happen to you, something you couldn't wish for because you never knew that it existed. I didn't find all of this joy on my own. I truly believe that there was some spiritual guidance involved, and it led me to the greatest gift I've ever received." So Julie, thank you for sharing your story with us. I'm sure you're going to help a lot of people. Do you even know how many people are adopted in the world or even in the United States?
It's hard to put a figure on that because it's not something that a lot of people like to share. For example, I came from a family that had three kids, and my older sister, Mary Liz, is my mom and dad's natural child. And then my brother was adopted, and then after that, 18 months later, I was adopted. So we're kind of a mixed adoption family, and it's hard to tell. Some people find it very difficult to tell other people that they're adopted. It's just something within them that they want to hide it, or they just don't feel comfortable with it because they have this sorrow and it's not a joyful thing. So I always say that every adopted child has in the back of their brain somewhere a little spot, and within that spot it's the feelings of, why did someone give me away and didn't somebody want me? So lots of people get over that. It's like you draw a line in the sand and you just continue on with your life. But some people struggle with it.
How old were you when you were adopted?
One day.
Oh, where were you adopted? Do you know?
I was adopted in Chicago.
Okay.
And so it's interesting. The state of Illinois is one of six states that allows you to get a non-certified copy of your birth certificate, which I learned all of this along this weird process. I never intended to look. It found me. So it's different. It's a different format. I mean, everybody always asks me, "Oh, did you do DNA and you found them that way?" And it's like, no, I did not. It's like if a weird series of events happened, that if they hadn't happened in a particular order, none of it would have happened. So that's why I kind of think I believe that somebody is looking out right now from heaven and saying, it's time to get these three girls together. So I think that's what happened.
That's beautiful.
I think the best thing for me to do is to tell you a little bit of history about my adoption. So I was adopted in Chicago and at one day old. And I remember stories that my family told me. For example, my mom always said, "Well, your father put his handkerchief over the license plate of our car, our family car, as we were driving away from the hospital, because somewhere in his mind, he thought that they could track me and they would come back to get me when they changed their mind." Well, back in those days, you had 6 months to change your mind. And so every time the doorbell rang or the phone rang, they was like, "They're coming to get her, we know it." So it never happened. And I'm gonna fast forward decades later, but now in the state of California, the adoption period is 72 hours. So when the birth mom signs those papers, it's done within 3 days. So, and I'll tell you how I know that, because I'm an adopted person who also adopted a child. So, but back to that, so they took me home. I want to let everyone here know that I had the most amazing life. I had two parents that were so loving and kind, and a brother and a sister, and we did everything together. I mean, we had such a normal family. And I do recall feeling that I was different. You know, no one in my family looked alike. My brother has brown hair and brown eyes and really dark skin. And I always kind of felt like my brother and I were two peas in a pod, because we could never be my sister. We could never be my mom and dad's natural child. So we carry that still to this day. But
was your brother adopted too?
Yes, he was adopted. Okay. And my mom was, I mean, she's such an amazing person. So how she had my sister, and then she had two ectopic pregnancies. So she lost two children and had to have a hysterectomy. And I'll just tell you this, my mom would adopt every kid in the world if she could. She loved children. And so my brother came through a, she was an interior designer in Chicago, and she met someone who knew someone having a baby and was going to give it up for adoption. And my mom, right then there, she said, I'll take your baby. I'll give it the grace, the greatest life. And how I came about was someone who knew my family, knew a woman who was giving birth, and they called my family on Christmas Day and said, we know someone who's giving a baby up for adoption in February. And my mom and dad were like, right on the phone, they said, yes, we'll take it. So it's just different. It was different back then than it is now. But
was your mom seeking to do an adoption, or these just kind of happened?
Well, she lost two babies.
Yeah.
But I have a hysterectomy. So she wanted a big family, and she just, I mean, she took in children even after my brother and I were there. If somebody couldn't take care of their child, she would take care of them. And then when they were ready, she would give them back. I mean, she loved children so much that she did that. So my history in my family is amazing. I can't even tell you how blessed I am to have been with that family.
Aww.
So let's fast forward many decades later. So my mom passed away 5 years ago. And while we were cleaning out her house, you know, there were files and we just put things aside. And so that was in May of 2015. That next Thanksgiving, my brother came for Thanksgiving to visit our family. And as he walked in the door, he handed me a file folder and he said, hey, we found these files. This is yours. I had a file. Mary Liz had a file. So these are your papers. And I just, we were getting ready for Thanksgiving. I put it aside. And a couple days later, I thought, oh yeah, I have that file. So I went in, I looked in the file, and there was a bunch of letters I had written home from college and things that my mom had kept. And all of a sudden, I found this blue document, and I opened it, and it was on onion skin paper. It was so old. And so it said legal document on it, and I opened it, and I was flipping through it, and all of a sudden, I saw three words, and it was baby girl Wyrick adoption decree. And I remember I was walking down the hall reading it, and I literally stopped in my tracks, because it was the first thing I had ever received giving me a hint of who I might have been. And back in the day, so that was a closed adoption, as opposed to my daughter's adoption, which is open, and that's her own story, which is an amazing story as well. But anyway, so I'm walking down the hallway and I'm reading this, and I turn to my husband and I go, look what I found. And he's like, what is that? And I was overwhelmed with what it was, and he didn't understand. And even to this day, he doesn't quite get it. Like, what? Okay, so you found, okay, great. But to me, it was the beginning of everything. So that one document, I decided to go online and I posted on some obscure website. I can't even remember the name of it, but it starts with Cousins Communication or something like that. And I just put in the date I was born, the place I was born, my mother and father's name, and the words baby girl Wyrick, you know, looking for anything. And I turned off my computer and I thought, this is a closed adoption. I'm sure, you know, they're older. I'm older. This is probably nothing. I'm not going to find anything. Well, the next day, and this is part of the process of the weird things that happen in sequence. The next day I received two emails. One of them was from a retired Chicago police officer, and he is a private investigator now. And he said, I saw your post and I look for people. That's what I do. And he said, I was in the same boat as you. I had all my brothers and sisters were adopted, and I ended up being able to find all of them. And so that's my life's calling. And if you want, I can look for anybody who might be related to you. But I already took like a first look, and there is another baby girl Wyrick in the system, in the adoption system in Chicago. So you may have a sibling. So I got the email from the police officer, the retired police officer. And then the other email I got was from someone who's called a search angel. And I never heard those words before, but those are people who work for free and they help people find members of their families. And they're genealogists and they are specialized in family trees and they're amazing. So this search angel told me that because I was born in Illinois, for $15, I could send my request in for a non-certified birth certificate from the Department of Public Health in Illinois. And she gave me the link for it. And I clicked on it. And I wasn't really sure at this moment what I was doing with all of this information, but I just went ahead and did it. And I got, a couple weeks later, I got something. It was a document. It was microfiche. It was like almost blurry. But I found the names of my birth parents, which were Ellen Palmer and Lee Weirich. And I called the private investigator and I said, I think I'm ready. I'm ready to look for this person. And he said, it's $200 if I find her or him, or if I don't, there's no charge.
Wow.
I said, okay, let's go. Let's do it.
What's his name?
His name was John Appel, A-P-E-L. And just a really kind person who had been through what I was going through. And so the next day, John sent me an email and he said, I found baby girl Weirich and gave me her, this is scary, but gave me her name, her previous two addresses, her social security number. I mean, he had a lot of information on this person. I'm not really sure how he found that. But so her name was Kate Murphy, Catherine Murphy, and she was married, and it gave me, you know, the information about her married name. And now she's Kate Peterson. So I was like, wow, I don't know how to find this person. But I went online, and apparently Kate ran for the school board in her county in Illinois. And so I was able to pull up her photo, which that was a big day for me because I actually took a picture of her picture with my phone and I ran around the neighborhood to all my friends. I'm like, does this person look like me? And they're like, absolutely, that person looks like you. So it had an email address and I questioned what to do here, but I ended up writing an email to her and saying, I think I may be related to you. And I couldn't send it for about 2 weeks because I realized that what if she doesn't know that she's adopted? I could burst her world right open with this one email. So I waited and waited, and finally around a couple days before Christmas, I just pressed send. And then I waited, and about a day later, I got an email back from Kate, and she said, I did know that I was adopted. I almost deleted your email because I thought it was a scam, but I want to talk to you. So for months, Kate and I went back and forth kind of with email, very cautiously. And then she sent me an email and she said, I'm coming to Los Angeles for work. And I said, what day, what time? I have to come and meet you. So on January 15th, I drove up to Los Angeles and I sat in the lobby waiting for Kate to come down. And I there's no word in the dictionary that describes this process, that when you see and hear and feel someone who is so much like you. So she came down the escalator and I was just mesmerized. I'm like, here is a piece of me. So we grabbed a glass of wine and we sat down in the lobby and she looked at me and she said, I have a piece of news for you. We have another sister. And I was like, whoa, like, how do you know this? And she said, well, after I got your information, and actually Kate sent in her $15 and got her birth certificate, so we matched our birth parents together. And she said, I started to do some research on the obituary of our birth mother, Ellen Palmer. And she said that she was survived by a daughter and a granddaughter.
Wow.
So what happens in all this process, to clarify, is that Ellen and Lee had me, which they gave me up for adoption. 2 years later, they had Kate, and they gave Kate up for adoption. 2 years later, they had another girl, Alicia, and they kept her. So what that does is it gives Kate and I information about where we came from and where we would have been had we stayed with Alan Lee. And so she gave me that information. And then that evening in the lobby in the hotel in Los Angeles, she and I started looking for Alicia. And one odd thing that happened, so in the obituary for our birth mother, it does list Alicia and survived by a granddaughter, Madison. So we had a last name and we couldn't find Alicia on Facebook anywhere, but we ended up finding Madison. And the reason we found her was because when she built her Facebook profile, she put from Dwight, Illinois. And so we knew that that's where our birth mother was when she died. And so we knew that Madison Daly was our, not only our niece, but we found Alicia through Madison's Facebook page because she put Dwight, Illinois. If she hadn't, she just would have been another Madison. We would have passed right by her. So I always tell Madison, I go, you played a part in this whole thing. Do you understand that? So bottom line, Kate looked at me and she goes, you need to send another email. So we had her, we looked up on a like person search and we got her email and her address and a bunch of other things. And
amazing what information you can access on people, isn't it?
Yep. It's like $29.99 and you can find out pretty much whatever you want. Everything's out on the web. So, yeah. But anyway, so I sent an email to Alicia and I said, we are possibly two sisters of yours that you may or may not have known that you ever had. And I gave her my name and my phone number and Kate's name and Kate's phone number. And I sent that morning. And about 3 hours later, the phone rang and the number was from Dwight, Illinois.
And I was like, that's neat.
So it was just such an odd way for the three of us to actually find each other. No DNA, no family trees, no nothing. It was just people giving us little hints along the way and finding and doing a little bit of research and finding this. So we decided to meet and we picked the Sheraton Hotel right by the Chicago airport. Like I think a month later, we all managed to get together and get rooms together. And I remember walking in and checking into the hotel and the woman said, yes, you do. And I go, yes, I do what? Yes, you do all look alike. So I had met Kate, but I had never met Alicia, and Kate and Alicia had never met each other. So it was the first time the three of us were together. And it was so, like I said, there's no word in the dictionary. I'm going to have to invent a new word for what this feels like, because I know that adopted people everywhere, when they finally find, so there's two things that have to happen. The first one is finding who you're looking for. And the second one is having the person or the people that you're looking for accept you, because that's an equation that has to happen together. But we got to the hotel and the three of us sat down and we were just like, wow, 4 hours went by so quickly. But the really sweet thing was, because Alicia had gone to the front desk and said, here's what's happening. My birth sisters are coming in. Can you please put us close together so our rooms are near each other? And so they did that. And all of a sudden we're drinking wine in the lobby and the hotel staff comes out and they have presents and things. And they said, we really loved your story and we're so glad that you chose our hotel to come and have this reunion, not even a reunion, a meeting. And so they gave us picture frames and they gave us gift certificates for the hotel. And it was just really lovely. And so we're sitting there for 4 hours and all of a sudden we look at our watch and we're like, wow, we should probably go have dinner. So then we go and have dinner. We realize, wow, we should give the waitress an extra tip because we've been here for 3 hours. It just, the talking just goes on and it's so much information and we'd want to know so many things. So all of a sudden we need to go someplace else. Okay. Well, Julie, you're the oldest sister. So we're going to follow what you say. All of a sudden, right then and there, I realized in my family, I grew up as the youngest sister. And now I'm the oldest sister. Like, there's some respect here. Yes, let me lead you. So I saw this little sign that said casino. I'm like, okay, sisters, we're all going to the casino. So we went up to the bar and sat down, and we said to the bartender, we need a really special drink. So he made us these delicious key lime martinis, and now that's our signature sister drink. So we sat down at one of those big, slot machines, the big one. And they were enough for three people to sit on the bench. And I said, okay, everybody give me $20. So we put in $60, and one by one, we took turns spinning it. Well, we won like $300, and now that paid for our drinks and our dinner and all of our fun. So we were just on a roll that night. And, you know, eventually the weekend had to come to an end, but we didn't want it to. It was just, you know, like tearing our hearts out to leave each other. But we did. And then I planned my next trip to Chicago. So we've had six trips or so. Some of them were for events, and some of them were just for things. One of the weekends I ended up going was my new niece, Kelly. Kelly was having an engagement party. And so that was on Saturday, and I ended up just being there on that weekend for it. And on Sunday, Alicia tells us that the Palmer family reunion is going on, and would we like to go? Well, Kate and I were like, whoa, what? Like, we're going to this reunion of all of Ellen Palmer's relatives, and they don't know that we're coming. We just popped in. So that was the big to-do. And come to find out, there was some family disagreement over the adoptions. But anyway, it was really nice to see and meet people.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see their faces when they didn't know about us. We just popped in, and here the three of us, you know, looking very similar and coming from the same parents, and some of them didn't even know that we existed. So that was fun.
Were they welcoming?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
You know, and when we first walked in, they're like, and then, oh, who are those people? Like, what? One of those people. So it was nice to meet other people from the family and not just Alicia. And, you know, going back a little bit, Alicia all along, like when we first got together, it broke her heart to talk to us that her parents had two girls that they gave away.
Did she know when she was growing up?
She knew about me, but she didn't know about Kate.
Wow.
And the reason that she knew about me, and we figured this out through process, is that my godfather, who was an attorney, he knew both families. So he was the one that actually knew of a baby being born and a woman wanting a baby.
Huh.
So he put the two parties together.
Okay.
And, you know, it was back in the day, it was very popular to have a closed adoption.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were a lot of Irish Catholic families in the Chicago area, and a closed adoption was just what it was. And so it's been really interesting for me to see these states by law opening up their records so that you can get this information. And I believe New York was the latest one that just opened up. And when I first did that, I thought, this is wrong, that you shouldn't be able to just get this information and possibly ruin someone's life by coming back into it. And so it all depends on how you look at things when you're adopted. Most people are like begging for any small piece of information that will tie them to a family that they lost. And one other thing about that adoption degree with the words baby girl Wyrick, it's going to go a little bit off track here, but it's important to note. I always knew that I had another name, and I always wondered, what if my name had been Wendy or Kathleen or something else? Like, who would I have been if I find out that I'm not Julie, I'm someone else? So it was a little bit of a relief to find out that it's just stated as baby girl Wyrick, and I didn't have a name, because my daughter, who is 19 and also adopted in an open adoption, she had another name when she was born. It's something that is, I hang on to it as I probably shouldn't. I should probably let it go. But to know that it could have been another person And so that's what this adoption story is really interesting to a lot of people, because we get to see Alicia. We get to see the home that we would have grown up in. We get to see how similar we are and how different we are, and which is more important, nature or nurture. So my situation is unique. So Kate is an only child and Alicia is an only child, but the nature versus nurture part. So my brother and sister that I grew up with, his name is Chris Curtin and Mary Liz. And so that's the nurture part of it. You know, how we were all raised and how our beliefs and our values are all the same. And then the nature part of it is Kate, Alicia, and Julie. And, you know, every once in a while I'll mention something like, oh, I went to give blood, but they couldn't find a vein. And they both laugh and they're like, oh, well, we have that problem too. So it's interesting to see how we grew up, how different we grew up, but there are so many similarities between the three of us, and we're literally 2 years apart. So Alicia, so Kate is the mystery child, and Alicia did know about me because of the attorney that was my godfather, and he knew Ellen Palmer and Lee, and he knew my parents as well. But he always kept it a mystery. Every time we would meet up for birthdays and things like that, and he'd come out to California to visit our family, he never said anything. And then one day my mom told me that he showed her a picture of a sister, a little tiny school picture that he kept in his wallet, and it was of Alicia. And I was kind of like, wow, my mom just gave me a piece of information. So I knew about her. And the odd thing was, after I posted this information on this cousin's communication site, I started looking back in some of the details that were on here. And I noticed that in 2006, someone had written Julie Wyrick. So all of this information kind of is an algorithm that pops up, and had written Julie Wyrick. She knew my first name, but she didn't know my last name. And she had been looking for me since 2006. This is Alicia.
Wow.
And apparently when she was little, her mom put her in the back of the station wagon. I don't know where, she doesn't have a great relationship with Lee, her dad, but they drove from Chicago out to where my family was in Santa Barbara. And actually she dropped her off with some cousins in Thousand Oaks, and then Ellen drove to Santa Barbara to look for me. So Alicia knew that, and she knew that she had a sister, but she just didn't ever think that she would find me.
Oh, so she wanted to find you.
She did.
A time ago.
And really odd things. When I got married, someone gave us a relative from Chicago, gave us a portrait of two little blonde girls. And I remember opening up going, this is kind of an interesting gift. But now when I think back, you know, people knew that they were two little girls. So, you know, she, the reason that I knew that she was looking for me was because her email address, which was an odd email, Yodel Rose. And all of a sudden I see, oh my gosh, this, she posted this in 2006. She's been looking for me since 2006. And then of course, when I met her, she goes, I've been looking for you my whole life. So, you know, it's interesting.
What did your mom tell her about you? Did your mom tell Alicia anything about you then when she was growing up?
I really didn't know that much about her. My mom she didn't know that much either. She just knew that I had a sister and that my godfather had a photo of her and that she just looked at it. And my mom was, she carried, you know, the loss of her children that, you know, through the ectopic pregnancies. And she loved children so much. She always used to say to me, I can't understand a woman that could give up her child. And that's how she felt about it. Now, I, as an older person who has adopted a child, I can understand why a woman would give up her child. I get that. I hold no judgment towards anyone and in any of this. And so it's just, this has been a complete miracle to Kate and Alicia and I, And it's been almost, well, it's been 4.5 years since we found each other. But truly, that first year, it was an event so big in my life that every day when I woke up for about 6-7 months, I would, the thought would pop into my mind first thing, and I would say, did that really happen? Did I dream this up? And then I would have to go back every morning and process all the things that actually did happen. And then all of a sudden I would go, yes, it happened. I believe it. Because it was so big. How could something like this ever happen? So when you're adopted in a closed adoption, you can do two things. One, you can suffer with it. Or the other one is you can go on with your life. You will always carry that. You will do a little suffering your whole life, especially if you have an older sister that is your mom and dad's birth child. Because
yeah,
she's the lucky one. To me, she got everything. And I love her dearly. I mean, she's such an amazing person. But there's always a little thing that's missing. So I know my brother feels that way too. But it's...
Does your daughter feel that way?
You know, so... She's an open adoption. And, you know, my husband and I, we tried for a couple years and, you know, there was IVF and failure and, you know, dismal expectations. And then finally, one day I said to my husband, I go, what do you feel about adoption? And he's so amazing. He just said, okay, like right then and there. So when you're going through this process of IVF and, you know, surrogacy, well, we didn't do that. We just did IVF and it didn't work, obviously. But you can't do both paths. You have to drop one and go to the other. And so we got really lucky. I mean, once again, somebody is watching over us, because how you do it back in the day, when she's 19 now, so 20 years ago when we started this process, you put together a binder. And in the binder has information about you and your family and what you believe in and, you know, your house and your pets and your car. And, you know, the license plate of your car has to be blacked out and your address has to be blacked out, because what if it's going to be a closed adoption? So you just do that and, you know, you don't know what you're going to get. Then you have 3 or 4 visits with a social worker and then you wait. Well, our social worker finished with us in July of 1999, and in August we got a call from the adoption agency saying, you've been selected and you're going to have a baby. And I knew it was a weird day, because I came home from work and my husband was in the driveway and he was just pacing in the driveway, and I thought, oh my gosh, something bad happened, somebody died, oh my gosh, okay, how am I going to handle this? And I get out of the car and he's like, we're going to have a baby. I'm like, what? Like, so we called the adoption agency and we talked to them and we've been chosen and it's an open adoption and everything's working out great. And we're like, okay, thank you, Beth Ann. Thank you so much. And we're just about to hang up and she goes, wait, don't you want to hear the sex of your baby? And I'm like, oh my gosh, we get to hear what we're going to have. So she said, yeah, you're having a girl. So we literally, I mean, we got a nursery together, like bam. My daughter Erica was born early. And so we were in the middle of something one weekend and we got the call and we ran to the hospital. And her adoption is amazing too. I mean, her birth mother was, she was away on a college scholarship and she was a pitcher on the softball team, and which is what my daughter does. And she, you know, she's just lovely. My husband and I would take Erica and we would have dinner with her like every month at least, so that she could see her. It was really important to me after many, many years of nothing to make sure that she knew that she had made a good decision and that she could watch her grow up. So a couple years later, she got married, the birth mother got married, and Erica was the flower girl in her wedding.
Aww.
So it's just... you know, it came to a point where I let Erica and her birth mom have their own relationship, but her kids play softball and she's come to see our daughter play softball and we've been to see her girls play softball. So our relationship with her is growing farther apart, but it will always be together. As a matter of fact, on the day that my daughter was born, I went into the hospital room and my husband had gone to get flowers. So it was just me and I was walking in there. And there was a lot of activity in there that I'll discuss later. But there were a lot of people in that room. And all of a sudden I looked over at her birth mom who was lying in the hospital bed. And it was almost as if everyone in that room disappeared at that moment. And I went over to her and she looked at me and she started to cry and I started to cry. And I remember just going down and holding her and we were both crying. And I said to her, you know, our tears are mixing. And from this day forward, we're in this together. And she just looked at me like with the look like, thank you, God, that I chose this person to take my baby. And so there's a lot more that goes to that story, but you know, we were so grateful to have each other and we still are. And I love watching her family grow and she's an amazing person. So we just feel like everyone got lucky all around.
That's beautiful. Beautiful story. Well, it sounds like, you know, when somebody is able to adopt, it brings them so much joy and yeah. So, I mean, knowing that you help somebody by letting, you know, whatever your circumstances are, you let somebody else have that joy and love.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was so important. The openness of it was so important. And like I said, I let my daughter and her birth mom have whatever relationship they're going to have. And it's not a lot right now, but at least they know each other. They know where they are. They know what's happening with them. They know they're successful and happy. They know of that of each other.
Right. So your daughter has a different backstory than you do. Like she isn't wondering as much, I would guess. I don't know though.
She's not wondering as much because she gets to see.
Yeah.
You know, she knows what happened and she watches me. You know, how does my mom handle this? Because adoption can be a really rough road for someone. And especially if it's closed and you're searching and you can't find. And so she watches me and she sees how comfortable I am with what happened to me. And then even before Kate and Alicia came along, she just, you know, we would talk about it. This is how I feel about it. And, you know, the amazing thing about me is that I got such a great life. And actually, when I talk to Kate, Kate's the same thing. I had an amazing life. My parents are wonderful. And so that's usually when you adopt a child, you are ready with, you know, endless, boundless love. And so when you bring that child in, it's always, not going to say always, but it's usually a really good thing. Now, what other people expect is for that adopted child to feel grateful, you know, their whole lives, I'm grateful. I don't think that always comes until later when you're older. Because when you're a teenager and you're trying to find out who you are, it's very difficult to figure out who you are because you have so many questions. Like, really, who am I? Like, I remember one time my mom had these photo albums and she gave us each the same photo album and they had these pages that you could just enter, you know, add the pages to it. And one day I got an envelope, and in the envelope, there were pictures of my mom's grandmother, my mom's great-grandmother, and members of their family. And I remember opening the envelope and looking at the letter and feeling, wow, grateful that my mom had gone to all the trouble to make copies and to put these into pages. But I looked at all the pictures, and I'm like, these mean nothing to me. I don't know these people. They have no impact on my life. They never will. And so what do I do with these? And I ended up sticking them in my closet and they're still there in an envelope because to me, they meant nothing. Now I called my brother and I said, did you get the photos that mom sent? What do you think about these? And he's like, oh, I think they're really cool. I put them in my album. Right? So it just goes to show you there's so many thought processes.
Yeah.
So you can imagine after having that feeling towards people that were my family, but not really, because they weren't related to me biologically. So you can imagine what happened when I ran into Kate and Alicia. And of course, the first thing that everybody asks is, do they look like you? And I'm like, yes, they do. And then I have to pull up my phone and go, see? So we do all look alike. And you know, we put our baby pictures together and so we could compare. And then we put our high school pictures together so that we can compare. And then we ended up, you know, putting all of our pictures together. And now we're just together. So
it's been really great. May I ask you, do you know why your parents did the first two adoptions?
Yes, I do. And no judgment. So Ellen and Lee were married to other people early in life. So they got, yeah, so they were married to other people. They had children. Like, I think Ellen had 3 kids and Lee had 2 kids. And so there are step brothers and sisters out there somewhere. But then they got divorced and something happened. And so they met later. And I think Ellen was 38 when I was born and Lee was 44 when I was born. So, you know, they had already had their families. They already had kids. And so, you know, back in Chicago in those days, kind of the rhythm method doesn't always work. And so Ellen became pregnant and they're like, well, we've already have our kids, we're older. And so the decision was made to give them up. And same thing with Kate, you know, I don't know why the rhythm method doesn't work very well, but 2 years later, Kate was born. And then 2 years, and the Kate went for up for adoption. And then 2 years later, Alicia was born. And from the story that I heard, Ellen begged Lee, please let me keep this child. And so Lee said yes. And that's how Alicia stayed with her family.
So yeah, that almost sounds like it was the Lee who was maybe the decision maker, your poor mom.
Yeah, you know, Alicia is not super forthcoming with information about him. And I have a lot of questions about who he was, but mostly I feel so lucky because my mom, Bert Curtin, she was a dynamo. I mean, she was in the Marines and she was a businesswoman and she was a decorator. She was so creative and vibrant and fun. And from what I've heard, Ellen was just as fun and just a hardworking woman who supported her family. And, you know, I've nature versus nurture, I feel really lucky to have both of those. And I know that you know Frances Pullen as well as I do, but I didn't really, something odd happened to me starting a couple years ago, and I didn't really know what to make of it until I figured out what was happening. So every time I would look at my watch or look at a number or walk by a hotel room, it was always the same number. Like it popped up so many times and the number was 219. So that's my birthday, February 19th. And I mean, it was just odd. Like I'd look at my coffee pot and it would be 219. And then I would, you know, open the page, open a book and I would be on page 219. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, it's just so visible to me everywhere. And then I know this sounds crazy, but one day I was sitting there and the answer came to me. So it's Ellen and it's my birthday. And I think that she is wanting to me to know that she is still with me. And after I realized this, it stopped happening for a little while. And I was kind of like, Ellen, where are you? You know, I had the privilege of growing up with Bert, but I really need to know who you are. And so it started happening again.
Aww.
So I know that sounds odd. I mean, some people are believers and some people aren't. And, you know, I'm a very scientific, rational mind, but there's no denying every, like 219, everywhere I went, it was like, there it was. And so I feel good about that. I feel like she had some part. Actually, what I feel is my mom was the last of all 6 parents. So the adoption parents, Kate's adopted parents, Ellen and Lee, and my parents, Bert and Jim. So my mom was the last of them to go to heaven. And I think she just went up there and said, okay, it's time to get these girls together. Because, I mean, she saw that I suffered in my life with this. And, You know, I was maybe going a direction that she didn't want me to go in. And I, you know, she worked really hard for me to understand.
So, yeah. Isn't that, it's such a beautiful story.
And I feel lucky. I mean, when I told my brother that this happened, he thought for about 30 seconds and he's like, wow, isn't that amazing? Aren't you lucky? Like, I'm so happy for you. Those are the words he used. I'm so happy for you. And then a week later, my sister came to Santa Barbara after my mom passed away and we found all this information. And she came and I said, and we were sitting at dinner and I already told my brother and I said to my sister, Mary Liz, I said, I have something to tell you. And I briefly told her what happened and she was quiet for about 2 minutes. And she was absorbing and no one said a word. And then she looks at me and she goes, you're very fortunate because your family just grew. And I was like, oh, she's like, don't worry. I'm happy for you. Go forward with this. And so I was so grateful that they both felt the same way because I still, to this day, I have a, it's like a loyalty issue to my sister, Mary Liz. Like I don't want to hurt her by introducing her to Kate and Alicia. And even the first time we were together, we were at this concert, there was a band playing, and the minute we walked into the tent, the song, We Are Family, I got all my sisters with me, and the two of us just look at each other, we're like, well, that was kind of weird. So that's kind of our theme song. But that happened, and someone, we sat down at a picnic table, and someone took our photo, and it was every single person in their two families, and the only two that were missing from my family was my daughter and my husband because they didn't make the trip. And so I wanted to post it on Facebook, like, oh my gosh, look what happened to me. Like, I'm so blessed and lucky. I can't believe this happened. But before I did that, I had to call my sister. And I said, hey, I want to post a picture on Facebook, but I want to make sure that it's okay with you that I do this. And I think I'm the only one that has this issue. She's like, go for it. But I just, it's
a, to think of her.
It's a loyalty thing.
Yes.
You know,
and, well, it's a thinking about other people.
Yes.
And, I mean, in this whole process, I feel like you have thought about what are the repercussions to everybody involved.
Absolutely.
That you were caring. So I understand that. Beautiful.
And I've been back a couple times to visit them, you know, and I'm dying right now because I haven't been there since last October because of this whole COVID thing. But the minute I get, you know, some time and they're okay with me coming, I'm going.
Yeah. Such a beautiful, beautiful thing that happened for all of you.
Yeah.
Thank you. What information would you like to tell somebody who wants to adopt? Maybe for parents or people that are thinking about adopting, what guidance would you suggest?
I would tell them, I mean, some people I've talked to that have these, you know, the intent to adopt, you know, there's a couple of things that you have to think about. For example, I have a friend who wanted to do a surrogate with, you know, someone else's egg and husband's sperm. And, you know, that brings up a whole, you know, thought process. Do I want, you know, the DNA of one parent, but not the other? So I feel like what happened to us was perfect because it was neither DNA from my husband nor myself. But if you, I wish I could give you a little snippet of what it's like in our family with my daughter. I mean, she's so amazing and we're so grateful. And I know that she's grateful, but you know, no one's DNA is involved here. Just the same as in my family, you know, I had no DNA to my sister or my brother. So you have to decide, you know, is that something that you really need to have as DNA? And then the second thing is, you know, just open your options because it could be a child that comes from anywhere and get advice. Get advice from people who have adopted. I mean, you can read books and watch videos about what it's like to adopt a baby, but get advice from someone who has adopted a baby so that you are more ready to accept all of the feelings that happen with that. And trust me, there are, when this child is becoming a teenager, it's just a weird time in life, even if you are like DNA related, But if you're not, there's some special things that go along with that. So, you know, to be ready for that.
Thank you. Those are really good points for people to consider. And then as you were raised, being adopted, what's your perspective or your feelings on, like, or from the child's point of view, like, what would you suggest, like, parents do when they're raising them? They should always be honest.
Absolutely. I mean, there, I do know some people who found out when they were 16, 17, that they were adopted, and all along they lived this life, and all of a sudden they find out that it's just shattered and that they're not who they think they are. And that is something that's too big. That's why I waited so long to leave an email for Kate, because I didn't want to ruin some, you know, her life. And I could have done that easily. So I had to take a big risk when I pressed send on that email. But I was so grateful when she knew that she was adopted. But, you know, I don't think Erica, my daughter, I don't think she knows the day that I told her or that my husband and I told her. And I don't remember the day. It's just something that you always do when you're growing up and you know, help your child to understand that it's out of love for everyone involved, not just her, but out of, you know, someone who gave an amazing gift. I mean, Erica's birth mother gave us an amazing gift, and it's a lifetime of gratefulness.
Yeah. Beautiful. So I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. What life advice would you like to share?
About, does it have anything to do with adoption?
No, anything.
Well, my life advice would always be to work hard to find joy every day, because you may or may not be adopted. You may have some sort of history. There may have been some things in your past that have happened to you that may have brought you trauma, or you have to, like I said earlier, draw a line in the sand and walk over that and enjoy the life that you make for yourself. Don't live your life for anyone else but you. And when your life is complete, the lives of others around you will be complete.
That's wonderful, wonderful. All right. And I like to ask people, what do you feel humanity needs to work on to make our world a better place?
Oh my gosh. Well, we're in such a treacherous time right now. But, you know, I was talking with a friend of mine, and we were, you know, talking about the riots and, you know, a lot of things that are happening. And, it, you know, it's Black Lives Matter, but it's Asian Lives Matter. And it's, you know, adopted people's lives matter. Cancer survivors, people matter. It's just people matter. And, you know, the best advice that I give to my daughter is, every day, honey, I need you. When you meet someone new, and she meets new people every day because of her job, I said, every day when you meet somebody, I want you to find 2 to 3 things really positive about that person. And, you know, if you get to know them later, you know, more later on, then you'll know, you'll start your relationship with this person in a really positive way. And I think that if people in the world did that, their outlook would change. You know, we make so many assumptive judgments just right off the bat, but there are great things inside every person. It can be like the most evil person on earth, but you know there's something good in there. So if you just find 2 to 3 things that are good about every person that you meet, that joy will live inside you.
Gosh, I love that insight. Thank you. What a beautiful insight. I'm going to use that.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Julie. Thank you so much for sharing about yourself, and I'm sure it's going to help other people.
Thank you, Lainey. I appreciate that you wanted to ask about my story. It's, you know, it's kind of, it was exciting for me that you asked me to do this, because I actually have a book. I started writing a book 2 years ago. Actually, all I have is the name of the book and the cover and a couple of chapters. But I do own the website for it. And I hope that, you know, everybody's like, you should write a book about this. Like, you share your story. And so the name of my book is Are You My Sister? And the reason that it came about was, you know, the book by P.D. Eastman, Are You My Mother? About the little bird that gets lost. One day I was sitting in my living room and that book was facing me. And I thought, wow, Are You My Sister? What a great title for a book about this story.
I like it. I think that's a great idea. And to me, like, that is like a sign. That was a sign, like, showing that to you. And I feel like definitely there was like divine intervention in your story as well.
No doubt. No doubt. So I was really excited, and thank you for letting me share it. I'm delighted.
Oh, good.
So this is a book that I keep on my desk. It's called The Me Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate sent this to me and one to Alicia, and she has one herself. So sometimes when I'm just sitting around here waiting for a Zoom, I will randomly pick a page. And normally it comes up, so there's several of these. Right now I am thinking. But because Kate gave me this book, I always write something in here about Kate and Alicia and what I'm thinking about the moment, about them and about us. And then I take a picture of it and I text it to them.
That's beautiful.
Because, you know, it's a book about me and about us. And I think it's, you know, it's something I can leave for my daughter. She'll probably read it later after I'm gone and she'll go, wow, really?
That might end up being a good book too, because you're really sharing your insights and your thinking and your thought processes about what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
wow, you sound like you have some really special sisters. It's so nice that you guys got connected.
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for my family that took me as a baby and raised me. I'm so grateful for, you know, my brother and my sister that I grew up with. I mean, my mom and dad are in heaven, but and then these two, I mean, they're just, I can't even put my finger on it.
I think you guys could probably even, if there's like speaking, you know, times, or be a speaker for like adoption groups.
Yeah. So that's my book, Are You My Sister? It started out being a little bit about Kate, a little bit about Alicia, a little bit about me and our lives. And then I was going to think about, well, there are other people in the world that are as close as sisters, but they're not related to you in any way, shape, or form. But those are the people that, you know, if you called them at 3:00 in the morning and said, I need you, they would be at your door at 3:15 in their pajamas. And those are sisters too. And so I was kind of going to morph into that. And then the book started morphing again. And what I really want to say to people, like, if you have one message, it's if you know or you're involved in anyone else's adoption, please, please accept where they came from and where they're going. And if it involves you, just accept their journey and that you're a part of it, and be joyful about it. Because I can't tell you, this DNA thing, where people are, you know, sending their genetic samples and they find out that, oh my gosh, my father is not my father. And who is my father? And then you go looking. I think that's the most important thing about adoption, is the word acceptance. I'm sorry, I just keep
talking
about
this. No, it's beautiful. You have a lot to share, and you would help so many people. So even just by doing this interview, you'll touch people's lives and help them. So that's always my motivation.
Well, thank you, Lainey. I appreciate that you asked me. I'm very grateful.
Thank you for sharing and offering. I really appreciate it.